Thank you for your attention. My name is Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and I'd like to welcome so many of you back. Welcome especially to our first timers, hopefully not your last time here at City Club, but it is a new year, and happy new year to our City Club family. Welcome back. A lot has happened in the time since we've met here. Of course, we're all thinking about our friends in Los Angeles and really all over the world. There's so much happening, and it's so good to have all of you back together to talk about all of that, and of course, more importantly, what we're all going to do to move our great city forward. There couldn't be a better room. This is the room you want to be in, as you can tell today just by looking around at who's here. There's so many amazing people, and that's why we exist. We bring together these great people to help you all do your part in moving Chicago forward. We have a number of officials in the room, and please kind of hold your applause because I'd want to get right to the topic. But Comptroller Susana Mendoza was here at the beginning of our program and had to duck out. Alderman Bill Conway, Alderman Michelle Harris, right back there. Welcome back. Commissioner George Cardenas from the Cook County Board of Review. Commissioner Rachel Arfa is always welcome, as is Commissioner Chris Brown from the Chicago Public Libraries, and Commissioner Clinae Hedspeth from Department of Cultural Affairs. If there are any other elected officials or city officials or state officials, please raise your hand. I'm sorry if I missed you, but I think we've got everybody. Thank you for being here. There's so many people who are currently shaping this city, and I could miss people. I'm just going to go through a number of you. Rebecca Scheinfeld, Jamal Cole, Marilyn Gardner, Jeff Shapak, Nick Valerano, Janae Myers, Patrick Murphy, Marilyn Rubio, Mary Person, Jack Lavin, Michelle Woods, Sarah Kammerer, Brooke Flanagan. This is just a sampling. Just a sampling of who's in this room and the different sectors that you're all representing. Eleanor Gorski is here. It really just proves that this is the room that you want to be in. And every one that I just mentioned is right in the middle of shaping this city, and it's so very much appreciated. We're honored also to have some legends here who have done so much over the years and continue to shape this city. Al Friedman is here. I believe Adele Simmons is here. John McCarter, thank you for all of your work. Bob Wislow, I think, is on his way. These are absolute legendary civic leaders who have shaped the city to date, and we appreciate all of those efforts. This list doesn't even include who we're going to have up here on this panel, so I'll leave that to our moderator, Chris Jones, to introduce the amazing people that we're going to have speaking on this panel. But before we get to that panel, I do want you to all join me in welcoming Lou Raisin. Lou is the CEO of Broadway in Chicago and is one of those legends who has had so much to do with the shaping of our wonderful city over the past number of decades. So he's going to give us somewhat of a condensed version of an amazing presentation that you'll see on the screen here. And that'll help frame today's conversation. And then you'll see after he does that, that Lou will introduce Chris Jones, who will then introduce the panel. As Jackie mentioned, we have blue cards on the table. We have a number of questions already pre-submitted. If you have any questions, send them on up. I'll be around the room. Feel free to give them to me, and we'll do our best to factor them into the conversation. Thank you again for being here. This is going to be a great discussion. I'm going to hand this over, ladies and gentlemen, to Lou Raisin. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a cartoon that I recall from a long time ago. And it's a guy jumping off a high-rise building. And a reporter sticks the microphone out. So the guy's halfway down. And he says to the reporter says, "So how's it going?" And the guy says, "So far, so good." That's how it feels every time we venture out into something new. We take a chance and hope that net will appear. And you guys show us this net's here. This is the beginning of something we feel very strongly about. It's about seeing downtown as a cultural stadium. We're thinking about other stadiums, and I'm not opposed at all to those other stadiums. But when we have a conversation about stadiums, I think there's one more we need to think about, and that's understanding the power of culture in this city. We need to think about issues about our downtown. Our downtown is the heart that pumps the blood into all those different sectors of the city. It's the engine that feeds our ability to fund South and West, as we should be doing. But we can't ignore that downtown. We have big issues, like neighborhood kids don't see downtown as theirs. We need to change that. Downtown, to me, is Central City, however we describe it. But it's, you know, there's no boundaries. This isn't about building a building, but this is really about thinking about things we went through with COVID. The unrest that came about to help us deal with issues that we needed to deal with, but also these accelerators that took place, the Amazon effect of retail and how it's huge impact and how we recover from it is in question. The issue of generational issue of, you know, you want to change how your work life is. You want that balance. We don't have a siesta. We don't take the month of August off. How do we balance? How do we look around the rest of the world and think about that balance? Work from home was one of those ways to start dealing with it. McKinsey came up with a study looking at three major downtowns, Chicago being one of them. And one of the things they come away with is that the sooner you react, the less time it's going to take and the less cost it's going to be. It's obvious, but at the same time, they push that you need to focus a rallying cry around one North Star. And to me, that North Star is culture. I look at tourism, and I think about conventions. Conventions, in my mind, are a dying breed. The only way we get a new convention is we outbid somebody else. We steal it from another city. But tourism is that growth opportunity. And the reason I focus on tourism, it means jobs at the end of the day. Not ivory tower jobs, but jobs where you can raise a family. Today's tourists are experiential collectors, and culture is what differentiates us from our competitive set. That's why people come to Chicago. And culture, to me, is very wide. It's ultimately what makes us us. It's the music we listen to. It's the crazy shit we do. You know, it's all of those things that touch our heart. It's our food. It's our music. You know, it's those myths we live by. And it's the stories we tell who identify who we are and what our system of beliefs are. And it's ultimately what touches our hearts and what brings us all together at the end of the day. Art's impact on zoning, I think, is absolutely incredible. We don't think about how zoning can affect us and how funding the arts is very important. If we think about it from a zoning perspective, you look at New York, you look at Manhattan. You know, it started out in the 90s in Soho, where it was affordable for artists to move there. And what happens when artists move somewhere? Other people follow. They followed from Soho to Tribeca and Tribeca to Dumbo. And that's the kind of movement we have going on in Berlin right now. It's 20,000 artists living and working in Berlin. And that's all driven because it's cheap rent. And they're respected by the community. They're valued by the community. If we think about from a zoning perspective what Chicago looked like not all that long ago in our downtown, you had what was the Michael Todd, now the Goodman, was playing porn films. You know, the State Lake was still operating, was still there, but not as a real theater. Until Daly threw down and we became the poster boys for TIFF. And if you think about Broadway in Chicago and our five theaters, the numbers are pretty impressive, but the number to me that becomes the most important and most significant is that 52% of our audience for our long-run shows comes from 100 miles away or more. Those are tourists. And they're not just coming to go to Broadway in Chicago. They're coming for culture to this city. But there's an awful lot of culture in this city. We need to change the way Chicago's perceived. And we need to think about how do we keep these kids that come here to go to school, the best and brightest, how do we engage them in this city and say, this is where it's happening. This is the place that you need to be. And they don't want to leave. It's awful hard for politicians to thinking big and bold when you have to face the ballot box as often as they do. But if we think about our festivals, it's a way of pushing that envelope because we're going to do things that are temporary. The London Eye was temporary. The Eiffel Tower was temporary. We can get away with some big and bold moves if we think about how to do it. There's some incredible little festivals taking place, and you guys have probably seen this one, the Special Olympics and the little yellow rubber ducks. And you, there's a number on the bottom of every duck, and you bet that your duck will win the race, and you hope to win, and everybody's cheering it on. But I want to add one more duck. This little yellow rubber duck added to that group. To me, I would see a spring festival that we support the Special Olympics. In the spring of the year, as the bridges open for the boats making their transit into the lake, that we think about, people know we've got a river walk, but if this little duck takes its position at the end of the river walk, not only will the stupid duck's head be sticking up above Upper Wacker, and you look at that and you say, what's going on? It puts a smile on your face. But what it also does, it gets you to look down there. And it's going to get you to go down there. And that becomes an Instagram moment seen around the world from Chicago. Thinking about lighting festivals. Chicago had a lighting festival in the 20s. But what happened at this festival? 250,000 people show up on State Street. And guess what? They celebrated the ability to turn on the lights. That was the big thing at that moment. Lighting festivals happen around the world, and Lyon is the mothership of those festivals. It started as a religious event initially. But the sales at the Sydney Opera House were never intended to be lit like this, but for a lighting festival. Big and bold comes from temporary, if we need it to. Our bridges need to be lit. I headed up the lighting framework plan under Rahm. I was rogue, and most of the things I do are rogue. But this effort really took 112 teams that formed 112 companies that formed 12 teams from around the world, focused on lighting. Lighting to be authentic for the city of Chicago. We need to light our bridges. One of the examples we put out when we were inducing these people to come together and imagine lighting in Chicago was this concept we came up with for the back wall of the Mart. Well, I'm pleased to say that with political support from Rahm and a little arm twisting, $12 million was put up to do the right thing on that back wall. There's another wall to be had. You know, I take the position that, no offense, but the lyrics audience is dying off literally. What can we do to push people into that facility, to understand the spectacle, the grandeur that takes place on that stage on a daily basis? Let's look at that wall on the outside. Let's put a symphony, let's put an orchestra on a barge in front of the wall. Let's go to Zell's Plaza on the other side of the river. And let's celebrate what takes place on that stage every day. Lower Wacker. All right. Lower Wacker. I think Lower Wacker is an opportunity. Not only from a lighting perspective, kids don't see downtown as relevant. I see Lower Wacker as an urban festival site. We're the home of house music. We add techno to it. I think we have an urban festival on Lower Wacker that these kids will say, now that's something I'm really proud of. That's something I want to go to. And it's all ours. I think about
artists.
And what if we gave an artist a street as a canvas? And what if we gave seven artists seven streets? I don't know what they'd do, but I can tell you that's a place that I'd want to be. And those streets don't all need to be downtown. They can be in our neighborhoods. But that's a conversation about Chicago, about arts and culture heard around the world. We need to think about our river and our lakes. And what if there's a barge, a farmer's market barge that shows up the Riverwalk on Thursday? And maybe on Friday it's in your neck of the river. And maybe there's an alternating barge that shows up with food trucks. Or maybe the theater comes to you. I think about 24/7 city. We need to have energy breeds energy. The more we can keep people out, the more we can keep the lights out, the more energy that's out there, not only the safer it is, it's a huge economic opportunity. In New York, the nighttime economy is worth $35 billion a year. We're not going to be New York, but it supports 300,000 jobs and throws off $700 million in taxes to the city. Nightmares have been proliferating through Europe for quite some time. Somebody who wakes up in the morning until the time they go to sleep, they focus on how can I help what's going on at night? How can I accelerate it? How can I support those people that are working in that space? They're starting to happen in the United States, but Chicago's not on the list. I look at the money that the city is putting in to induce developers to do the right thing on LaSalle. All the right reasons. And mixed use is part of it. But is that a street you want to live on? The way it exists today? You know, Batman didn't pick LaSalle because it's a warm, fuzzy place to be when the lights go down. You know, how do we reimagine that street? We have what we refer to as these mausoleums, these incredible pieces of architecture through our downtown. There's stops on an architectural tour, but there's no life in those buildings. I've done some travel tied to this effort, and this is a picture of a bookstore in Portugal. The only way you access this bookstore is you buy an admission, timed admission ticket. There's another one in the Netherlands, a 700-year-old Dominican church, and I would buy a book just to spend some time in that space. It also requires a timed admissions ticket. We have those kind of spaces here in the Rookery in Chicago, just as an example. I'm not saying it should be the world's most incredible bookstore, but what can we do to breathe life into that space? I think about the verticality. I think about the color issues. I think about, you know, it's drab. What do we do with LaSalle? And what we're talking about LaSalle applies to State Street, applies to all of the rest of our downtown. How do we break this thing? How do we make it feel different? Do we connect things? There's examples from around the country and around the world. And one of the places I look at is the Tate Modern. The Tate Modern has slides. These slides, if we think about one of these slides, six stories up, coming off of a building in LaSalle, whether one person goes down the damn slide or not is irrelevant. It changes the way you think about that street. There are things that are transforming on these streets around the world. Right down the middle of the street, there's a shopping center in Tokyo. In San Francisco, Salesforce Park is a world-class park suspended over a bus station in the middle of the street. So I start riffing off the concept of what might that feel like if we start playing with it. Do we create an international competition so we get incredible minds to dream and think about what could be down that street? I don't know what they do, but I'm telling you, it's game-changing time. We think about the public realm and how we need to blur that feeling, especially on a residential street, between what's public and what's private. Looking down LaSalle Street, you look at these donut holes in these buildings. These buildings were light corridors in buildings built prior to air conditioning. To me, those are opportunities. Those are pocket parks. You know, think about those connecting three little pocket parks with the Rookery right on the bottom right corner. There's opportunities up and down LaSalle. We think about the power of 1871 and how it's changed the perception of Chicago from a tech standpoint. But maybe it's time for another 1871, and this one for the visual and performing arts. And maybe it's time to create a not-for-profit where these artists and these people working in this space can come together. There's 220 theaters that make up the League of Chicago Theaters. There's more than 20% of those that are looking for a place to call home. The Harris Theater serves as home to 9 dance companies. Maybe it's time to think about, and maybe it's one of those mixed-use buildings that we're talking about in LaSalle that sees this kind of opportunity for 60-seat theaters, 80-seat theaters, 120-seat theaters, galleries, rehearsal stages, all in one place where we can support these artists and they can feed off of each other, all working toward a common goal. I think about spaces differently, and as strange as it sounds, add it to the strange list, the Pedway. The Pedway looked like this at some point in its life. God knows when that was, because I've never seen it looking that clean. But it doesn't take much to make it feel very different. What if 8 o'clock at night, you've gone to dinner, you've gone to a show, and a section of the Pedway turns into a digital experience? And it changes. You've gone down, you've got visitors in town, let's go down the Pedway and see what they're doing. Mind-blowing. You know, I look at the river and the power of the river. At the bottom right corner, the Creative Industries District has been on DK's map for, I think, 12 years now. It's time to push. It's time to think about the power of that concept. It's 1.2 miles from the river at Cermak to McCormick Place. And you've got Motor Row and Chinatown smack dab in the middle. Cermak can be North Avenue. It can be that kind of power if we focus on it. One of the trips we made is to the Netherlands, and this is a warehouse. It was an abandoned warehouse that people were covering with graffiti, and every week you'd go there, there's new graffiti on the building. Well, the NDSM is a building of buildings. You walk through the doors, and you're blown away that these are artist studios. You touch the artist, you engage with the artist. The artists are celebrated. They're given a place to do their work, and it's a powerful position. I think about our expressways, built in the 60s. Whether it was intentional or not, I see them as a moat that were built around the city. It's time to blow up the moat. It's time to get rid of, you know, this is the dividing line between the north and the south, and you stay on your side. It's got to go. And maybe it's time to plank over the Stevenson and build Unity Park, a park that celebrates getting rid of that line. And there's concepts of these plankings around the country and around the world. I know they're expensive, but it's got to be on our list. Google is coming into the State of Illinois building with 3,000 people. And they say they're going to quickly go to 6,000 people if they feel the energy. We need to help them feel that energy. And a good chunk of that energy is in the West Loop. Let's plank over a section of the Kennedy. This is the Markethal in Rotterdam. To me, it's a passageway from the Loop to the West Loop. It's a corridor. But it's an incredible destination at the same time. It's not only an incredible piece of architecture, it's an incredible piece of art. It's a food festival. It's a destination unto itself. If we start riffing off of that kind of concept, what might that feel like in Chicago? That's a game-changing way to start thinking about a city on the move. I'm convinced those are conversations about Chicago. I'm convinced it blurs that line between where I can go and where I shouldn't go. But I'm convinced food is part of it. Another reason for being in Rotterdam is the depot. In our museums today, in the 90% plus of the museum's holdings of any major institution are in storage. You don't see them. The depot built a new warehouse. And that warehouse turned the concept of a warehouse on its head. They're open to the public. Not only is it an incredible piece of architecture, but they allow you to come in and see these holdings in this warehouse condition. You look at this, the stock exchange building on LaSalle. The Louis Sullivan building was being torn down in the 70s, and the Art Institute said, if you don't want it, we do. And they rebuilt the building, that room, into the modern wing. Well, at the end of LaSalle Street, we have another problem. Not just what the stock exchange was, but the Board of Trade. No longer there. You know, it's we have vacant spaces. Maybe it's time to change the way that street feels. Put a nose on the damn building and let's celebrate it for arts and culture that screams down the street that this is not the same street. What if we took that space in that building or others in this cultural downtown and we built our own depot, what I'm calling a trove, where we celebrate those works, those incredible works that our institutions have that are held back where no one can see it. And maybe it sits in one of those buildings. I think about our first floor in the public realm and how we need to change that kind of feeling. We've got alleyways, but we treat them as a place where the garbage cans sit and the trucks come in. But we look at in Detroit, the Belt. The Belt in Detroit is a destination. It's they gave the power of that alleyway to a gallery that abuts it. And they said, if you want to do something, we're all there to support you. And they did it. And the alleyway is now on a destination of the must-see things when you visit Detroit. This is the alleyway next to the Chicago Theater. And I'm not saying it needs to be Poetry Way, but think about that as an example. Think about that. There's somebody in the crowd I'm not even listening to right now. But think of that as an example, as an opportunity to do something with that space. And maybe the Poetry Foundation says, not only are we going to do Poetry Way in downtown, but we're going to do Poetry Way in every neighborhood in this city. There are ways of thinking about all of these things working together. We can change the direction of our traffic on the Kennedy twice a day when it's working. But why can't we change twice a year in our cultural stadium, in our downtown? Why don't we do what they do in Paris and Rome? We have to think about how to deal with those visitors coming to our city that are looking for the retail experience on Michigan Avenue and can't find it. What do we change it to? Food, I'm convinced, is a big piece of that. Whether we think about how to deal with Michigan Avenue, whether we think about allowing certain things to happen with Three Seasons spaces built out so they can extend the restaurants. But let's also think about lighting and the power of lighting. Cranes, a couple months ago, threw down the gauntlet and says, okay, 20 years since Millennium Park, now what? Well, I'm here to say that there have been two things in recent history that changed our downtown. One was the Theater District, and the other's Millennium Park. And it's time for culture to do it all over again. And this is where we start. I suggest we create a cultural umbrella. And this cultural umbrella is to bring kids from 3 to 13 years old into culture. To me, it's kind of like a Happy Meal. The first time you take your kid to McDonald's, they don't know what McDonald's is. You get them a Happy Meal. They don't know what a Happy Meal is. But from that point on, the kids are taking the parents to McDonald's. The more we can keep these kids together as a family, the more we can touch their hearts with culture, the more power we have to give these kids that opportunity they need. And 3 to 13, the then black mayor of Denver, several years ago, came up with a concept he called 5x5. And I'll bastardize the program, and I know we can't do some of the things, but if we can require kids to show proof of vaccination when they start school, I would love them to show us that they've been to 5 cultural somethings as a family. And damn it, I want to bring the cultural community together. We all do things for kids, but there's no unified way of making your way through this maze.
let's figure it out and let's give it to the kids. I think about a freshman class. We have vacancies in our offices in our cultural downtown. Let's create one-year residency programs. Let's give it to these artists. Let's make them know they're valued. Let's subsidize their rent on you know, after you've been in a residency program. Let's give you another opportunity with subsidized rent. There's a way of these people. There's magic in artists. And I don't care what level of artist you are, but there's power in those people. And then let's build the trove. Let's build our warehouse. The cultural stadium to me, and the way I talk about it, it's no pride of authorship or ownership. This is about everybody rallying around that North Star. And it's about breathing wind into everyone's sails. And we've been having a lot of discussions, and there's been an incredible team that's come together, and this continues to grow. And I hope it grows with you, too. Culturalstadium.com is a website we have up. And we'd love to hear what you think. What are we thinking about that's right? What are we thinking about that's wrong? And tell us how you want to engage and what we're missing. This is something that I think applies to all of you. You wouldn't be here today unless you can feel this and understand this. We need to think big and bold. And with that, I'd like to introduce Big and Bold, our moderator for today, Chris Jones.
Hi, everybody. How's everybody doing? I'm Chris Jones. I'm the long-time theater critic for the Chicago Tribune, and also now the editorial page editor. I wanted to say for a second why the Tribune has endorsed this idea, at least in concept. I think it is a desire. A couple of things happened with me. I remember during the Democratic National Convention, which I think everybody felt was a big win for the city, looking at all the positive media coverage that came and being surprised by what young people were discovering about Chicago as if they'd never known it before. And I had this moment of realizing that you do have to reintroduce it for a new generation all of the time. I think that I feel this need, having lived here for 33 years, for this city to get going again, for there to be new attractions, for there to be some good new things for people to come and see. I spent a lot of time in New York, and I had a realization this fall that New York had completely priced itself out of the tourism market for 95% of Americans. It was out of control there this fall, and I thought, what an opportunity for Chicago. And 20-odd years ago, I wrote in great depth about Millennium Park, spending a lot of time with John Bryan. And I remember him telling me how Chicago is different from New York and other cities because city and suburbs came together and that there were no barriers and everyone pitched in. And I think we could all agree that Millennium Park was one of the great triumphs of this city, which was just a kind of a remarkable thing. And I just want to see us do that again. I think it was this was really something that was a kind of a special achievement. I do think Lou doesn't like to talk about this, like all cultural professionals, but there has been a diminishment in our cultural offerings, and we have to face that. I know it very well. I go to the theater almost every night, and I know how much there is, and I know there is less than there was before the pandemic. And it's not just the theater, it's all of our cultural attractions, whether it's the Art Institute of Chicago not being open every day. We have to face up to the fact that there are serious problems in downtown from that point of view. And it's affecting the cultural sector in general. It's affecting Columbia College. It is having some consequences. And I think if you go downtown, as I do often in the morning, you are often struck by that there aren't enough people around. And I think that's very important. I also think, last thing, that if you were to ask me my greatest day in Chicago, it was standing on the steps of Tribune Tower, back when we were in Tribune Tower. And I watched, it was right after the Obama inauguration. I watched the stream of people coming up Michigan Avenue. And I looked over to the right, and there was Oprah Winfrey setting up with Will.i.am on Michigan Avenue. Some people here will remember this. And I remember standing there thinking, I'm raising my kids in the greatest city in the world. It's the center of everything. And that was the moment, and I think that's what we have to aspire to getting back. So, to talk about this issue in more detail, let me introduce Michelle Boone, the Poetry Foundation President and CEO and the former very distinguished Commissioner of Cultural Affairs for the City of Chicago. Come on up. Mr. Greg Cameron, who is the president of the Joffrey Ballet and its CEO. Mr. Joe Ferguson, the president of the Civic Foundation. And Mr. Juan Gabriel Marino, JGMA Architects, the president and the founder. Please put your hands together for this panel. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Let me start with this question. I'm guessing most people in this room were like, well, that's all really cool, Lou. I agree with all of that. Those are all great ideas. How do we move? I'll start with you, Joe, on this. How do we move from Lou's presentation to these to, what, let's call it, shovels in the ground or something like that?
I get very emotional every time Lou does a different version of this presentation. Because what it brings to mind is, for a while now, we have all been living in something of a reactive crouch to all sorts of challenges that we face here, regionally, nationally, and globally. And a crouch is an absolutely reflexive, protective reaction to exogenous circumstances, but over time it's a choice. And we have a choice to make. And I think about Lou's vision here from a concept that's fairly familiar to many of you who actually are working hard to try to expand opportunity in our communities and our neighborhoods, and that's asset-based community development. And we don't think about asset-based community development from the perspective of the downtown. We actually need to expand that to the city as a whole and the identity of the city as a whole. And I think one of the things that we tend to do here and everywhere is think about what the obstacles are. All of the obstacles are choices as well. Whether it's constraints from a regulatory perspective, whether it's constraints from exogenous circumstances, people worry about crime. I ride the red line both directions every single day and walk the streets of Chicago, and yet here I sit whole, right? But it's a natural reaction. Crime isn't the issue. It's the fact that we tie our narrative right now to crime and other phenomenon that are our challenges at this moment. And it's a choice as to whether or not, and there's another tendency, we look to government to solve things for us. Government can't solve everything for us. We have to be the solution ourselves at times, especially in constrained circumstances. The people think about budget constraints as they should, so on and so forth. But asset-based community development, if you think about that and actualizing and activating and extending all of our strengths internally that we have compartmentalized at every level of our community, partly out of self-protection, things open up. And there are a number of city officials and former city officials in this room, and that tells me they get it. They get it. And what they need to see and feel and hear is that we all get it, and we're in it with them. I think this is as much about government getting out of the way and lifting constraints as it is about what we ask government to do for us. The gathering in this room reflects the fact to me that all of the investment, whether it's cultural capital in a broader sense of things, whether it's financial capital, all of it is here. It's a matter of will. I don't see this as a constraint moment. I see it as an imperative to free ourselves from what is feeling like a constraint and constriction moment. I don't see government as the solution. I see government as a facilitator that opens up the path to all of you to step into this broader new vision in which our streets, our built environment, our downtown, in a sort of hub and spoke configuration that reaches all of the neighborhoods and creates dynamics in all of the neighborhoods, is opened up. We have it. It's here. Almost everything, no matter what challenge we are facing in this moment, I truly believe, my organization believes, and I think many of you feel, almost everything we need as a narrative matter, as a growth matter, exists internally to write our next chapter. I don't see constraints.
Thank you, Joe. So let me ask you that same question from, you have a lot of experience under Rahm as a Commissioner of Cultural Affairs and a lot of broader experience as a philanthropist and a nonprofit CEO since then. Joe has sort of said government is not the answer, perhaps. Would you agree with that? Or maybe another way to think about that is what should government do?
I'm not answering that. they're part of the equation. It's the public sector, the private sector, and the philanthropic sector. That's what made Millennium Park happen. It's the only way to realize the ambition of what's been laid out with some of the ideas of this cultural stadium. It also takes leadership. Millennium Park had John Bryant, who was a very charismatic gentleman.
He was.
Who had access to the doors and the people and generated the will to make it all happen. So I think there's a history beyond Millennium Park. There's a history in the city of collaboration among those three entities, the public sector, private, and philanthropy. We have a really rich philanthropic community here. We have people who care about the city that they live in that really want to imagine a better place. Joe talked about the sense of, for me, it's not about crime, it's about safety. And I want to feel safe in my city, whether or not the reality or the illusion of crime being high. I think what some of these ideas offer are a way to transform perceptions about safety in spaces that would bring people out and also hopefully inspire folks to support financially the idea of building a space, building a city, building community. That's what this is really about, how to use culture for community building.
So Juan, a lot of what Lou was just talking about, you might describe as adaptive reuse, right? He's taking like the buildings on LaSalle Street, which we all know are sitting empty, many of them. Mm-hmm. We've all read the stories about the real estate values dropping particularly in the southern part of the Loop. And then he's talking here about sort of adding things to facades. He's talking about adding light. I'm curious, from an architecture point of view, this is a city, of course, with this incredible tradition of architecture. What's the view currently, if you like, of that kind of adaptive use of buildings? Are we talking big structural changes? Are we talking about preserving the integrity of the buildings? What's your view of that from an architect's perspective?
Yeah, happy to share it. First, I just want to make it clear to everybody, when you saw the list and all the names, I'm just the person with the microphone today. There have been a lot of incredible minds that have come together in many, many months of just caring. And as I like to say, that when you get that text message from Lou, as you can tell, you're like, oh God, what's this going to be about? I can't wait, right? And I've had the pleasure and honor to be in a room listening to a lot of incredible, beautiful minds. And with that, there are many aspects to this that help deal with the commentary of, that's too much money. I like to joke and call it the can't chant. But there are aspects to it that have to do with infrastructure. We have significant canvases in our city, if we look profoundly enough, that are there for the taking. That is the epitome of adaptive reuse. It's there. And so these explorations start to scratch the surface of what those are and what the potential is. Yes, then there's those like the big duck, right, that are broader and bigger or getting into capping expressways. but they're all possible. You know, I come from Colombia, a city, Medellin, that has an incredible asset, a river that runs through it. Nobody wanted to be a part of it. Then they started to, the public utility company started a lighting competition that they spend a year designing a light system that everybody starts coming to it. That same idea, that granule that started a momentum, now has created a place of development, a place of tourism, a place of change where people don't think about Medellin the way they used to and don't have the semblance of fear that they used to, or that this now gringo, when he goes back, I worry less about walking around and speaking, whether I speak in Spanish or English. Those are the potentials that we have here in our backyard. It's there for the taking.
So you are an institution whose home is downtown. So, and the Lyric Opera. Now, what's that been like for you? What's changed in the environment where you work, and what would you like to see happen for your institution?
Two homes. Sure. Yep, two homes in the loop. So the Joffrey Tower at the corner of State and Randolph, where we have seven studios, and then, of course, our performance home at the Lyric Opera. And I think as a lifelong Chicagoan and somebody that grew up at the Department of Cultural Affairs when Harold Washington was mayor, I quickly learned the importance of collaboration. There was an organization or a committee of the Department of Cultural Affairs called the Chicago Collaborative. And it was sort of like this group today. I feel like this is a bit of a family reunion, seeing so many people that I haven't seen but that I know are still doing important work. And at the Joffrey, we lead everything we do with our commitment to artists. And some of those are company artists that are performing, but a lot of them are would-be artists, students in our academy. During the course of a year, we have 500 to 700 students studying at Joffrey. We're also out in the Chicago public schools with our community engagement programs under the leadership of my colleague Linda Swayze. So we lead with artists, and I think what is most important to the success of any of these ideas is to remember that artists are why we do what we do. Artists are first respondents. As a gay man back in the 80s, before politicians or anybody could say the word HIV and AIDS, you know, people got together, they created quilt panels. You know, the AIDS quilt is an example of some big, bold project that tells a story. And we love artists because they tell stories and they create humanity for us. So I think what inspired me when Lou first started talking about this was my desire to fall in love with Chicago again. You know, I was the chair of the State Street Commission coming out of COVID. Mm-hmm. State Street was not what I remembered State Street to be. We have our offices and our academy on State Street. I wanted it to be safe, to Michelle's point. You know, I wanted people to make the choice to be able to come back to the Loop. In working with the Loop Alliance, we created Sundays on State. A small step, but a beginning of being able to say, hey, come back to the street that you love. So I think we've heard a lot of C words here, choice. In 1893, 26 million people made a decision to come to Chicago to attend the World's Fair. 26 million people. I can't get my head around that. I don't know how they got here, where they stayed. We didn't have Choose Chicago. We didn't have a tourism agency. But we did have a group of corporate leaders, you know, the Smith family that said, hey, this is important. So I think, you know, you made a choice to be here today. Let's all continue to lean into the power of curiosity, creativity, community, and collaboration. And I believe that we can make any of these ideas happen. I think the big challenge is to winnow the list down and get some early successes, because we also know that one success begets another. But yeah, Millennium Park is fabulous. We love it. The Harris Theater in Millennium Park, the Plensa sculpture, Kapoor's Bean. But 24 years later, it's time for the next big thing. And I just, you know, appreciate you being here, and let us know. You know, this is not about me. It's not about Michelle or Lou or Joe or Juan or Chris. It's about you. You know, take ownership, and we can change this city for the better.
It's just, you know, sometimes I feel... I had a moment also right before Christmas where I started looking at our letters file, and people were beginning to write in to say how disappointed they were with the Christmas windows on State Street. How we'd gone from these ridiculous displays to this crappy, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't what people came down for. And I remember thinking, surely a great metropolis can pay attention to what's in the windows on State Street, you know? And how do we get to the point where we're not doing that, Joe?
Ha.
I'm going to go back to the crouch. Again, it's a choice. I'm not going to repeat things that I said before. But we've gotten there because I believe our narrative is rooted in our problems. And the choice is actually to forge a new narrative. Michelle rightfully turns from crime to public safety. Jane Jacobs told us 70 years ago that the single biggest factor in the sense of safety and in actual public safety is there being people on the streets engaged in everyday activity. We actually are, as a matter of our humanity and our relational connections, self-regulating. We need to open ourselves up, and we need to create the dynamics that bring people back. And as for, yes, absolutely, planking over expressways, enormous amounts of money. But one of the wonderful things about Lou's vision here and the broad array of possibilities is this is scalable. You start small. You start with Poetry Way.
And Poetry Way is between the Chicago Theater and Joffrey Tower.
And so this is scalable. It's a grand vision, but it's a grand vision that is very, very eminently achievable at a small scale, locally, and building upon itself. And what makes it build upon itself? People seeing people.
But I think it's also important to not neglect what's already here and does the work every day. And what are the opportunities to kind of thread and connect the work that's happening into kind of a broader new narrative about the aspirations of a cultural state? We have the cultural stadium because there's stuff already here. Good stuff. And interesting programs that are designed to engage the public. We've come out of a really, really tough period with the pandemic, and people are still wrestling with trying to get back on their feet. So is this an opportunity to use something new and shiny that may attract new money, but still continue to invest or reinvest and what's here as a part of this new narrative?
Just quickly, I think one of the things that COVID did, and I actually COVID is the second shock to all of us. 9/11 and our sense of security after 9/11, I don't think we ever got over that. And so we see more security, more concern about safety. COVID sort of drew us in even tighter. We've evolved into something of a bilateral kind of relationship with our cultural institutions downtown, all of our strengths, where people come in, they go to see the show, and they leave. There isn't a broader ecosystem and environment that actually creates a dynamic where they're seeing Chicago for all that it is. And back to asset-based community development, which is a variant on what Michelle was just saying, it is all here. It needs to be connected, but not connected through strands and marketing connections. It needs to be connected by a larger shared ecosystem in which all of these institutions actually engage. And this dynamic creation of engagement of space, creative reuse that Lou has very much captured.
I mean, I do think we've sort of lost the late night city. Every time I walk into Pedrino's, it's last call. Doesn't matter how long the show was, it's always last call.
I think that's telling you something, Chris.
I walk in and they say, it's last call. And I go, So, you know, I think you're alluding to the fact that people go to one of Lou's shows and they don't stick around. Yep. They get back in their car and they drive away. How can we get back this night in Chicago, this idea which is central to its image, to its mission, and that we see in big European capitals thriving with tourism in many cities so huge that people are trying to cut it back?
Well, people go home because those people are old, like me, and they want to go home. So the answer is, what are we doing for young people? What's the vibrancy for young people? Downtown, you think of all of the colleges and universities. What are we doing to keep that population, that demographic, excited about being downtown in dormitories, wanting to be a part of it, and building a new community? And I think some of the ideas that Lou put forth are absolutely ways to engage and ask and invite those folks. Like, okay, what do you want to see happen downtown? What are the ways that culture can reignite your imagination?
I think that's a perfect segue. Do we have some questions? Or how do you want to handle this?
Yeah, I've got them. Yeah,
okay.
Actually, I'll put together several questions, which were mostly about the relationship between what you're proposing, Lou, and what the neighborhoods would get out of it. So you have obviously a current mayor who's emphasized the neighborhoods, a prior mayor who very much emphasized the neighborhoods. We all know there's very good reason for that. How does this relate to the neighborhoods? I'm going to say the obvious answer, let's not say it, is that it's all one, or there's a sort of a cliche that gets said about this. What is, on a deeper level, is the relationship with this and the need to reinvigorate neighborhoods that you could argue have deeper problems than downtown at this moment? Whoever wants to take that.
I suggested earlier on hub and spoke. Every community-based cultural and arts neighborhood should have an opportunity to use the downtown as a canvas, and vice versa. We think about things quite often from the perspective of our core legacy institutions, our cultural institutions, going out into the neighborhoods. We actually need to continue that, but we also need to reverse it. And one of Lou's sort of initial remarks is children don't view the downtown. Our people in our neighborhoods all over the city don't view the downtown as theirs. We actually need to create that multiplicity, that duality. It's a both and. It's not an either or.
I would just add to that. I think that's critical that we make the youth feel like this is their Chicago. I think that's so fundamentally important. You know, certainly for me, when I did a project in Pilsen, the high school, and just interacting with the youth and talking about the potential of using the roof to be able to see downtown. And they said, but that's not ours. And so this is a very real problem and one that is tangible that we can change. And I think the more that we plant these seeds, whether it's, you know, the center, but these ideas find their ways to the neighborhoods. Yeah. They can easily find their ways to the neighborhoods. So it's not an either or, it's an and.
And is there a way to use some of these ideas as an economic stream to fund revenue generated from the activations that happen downtown? The beneficiaries could be neighborhoods for replication or other arts types of engagements in those communities. Like, there's got to be a financial model that serves all. What's the win then for neighborhoods if these big shiny things are happening downtown? Can we come up with new revenue models that then are feeders, financial feeders, back into communities so that they have access to their own ideas?
Do you see, Joe, I'll ask you this question. Do you see the West Loop as now the enemy of the Loop? And before you say no, We have seen enormous growth there. So if you go to the West Loop now, you see people, you see many of the things that you're advocating. And if you walk over to sort of LaSalle and Jackson, where there were those people, you feel sometimes like they're all now in the West Loop. And we've seen new hotels, we've seen new restaurants. What's that relationship now? And I speak as a former, I lived in the West Loop in the early 90s when it was very different. But I'm always interested in that. How do we, you know, are we now in a competitive world between those two? We have a new downtown and a struggling older downtown. How do you see that?
Our population is 2.7 million. And it is said that in order for this city to actually thrive in a sustainable way, we need population of about 3.3 to 3.4 million.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's sort of looking at the posing of the question, and Chris, I know you don't mean it this way, is sort of focusing on a negative dynamic that has come to exist. And there is another fact, and I view the Fulton Market area as an area that actually has grown and been created with specific, vaguely Jane Jacobs notions in mind. There is life in the streets. There is life in the streets because there is a diversity of institutions, activity, and many other things. The built structure, and Lou used the term mausoleum, that's a really important term. We have extraordinary structures downtown that were built truly as mausoleums to the industrial titans of another century. But it's our city. We need to activate that from the perspective that the Fulton Market people brought to bear is we need to open it up to all of us. And the fact of the matter is people out there beyond the city, around the world, they see that happening. They come to the city. Some of them stay. The young people that we're teaching, they leave the city for opportunities. They stay if they see all of this dynamism.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to give Lou the very last word. So maybe the John Bryan of this era is sitting in this room. Who's going to make
or
this?
Or Jane.
Oh, Jane. Who's going to win the? Who's going to? Make this happen. Like, how do we? What's the next step in a nutshell? Who is that? Do we need that person? How are we going to do?
If we model off of Millennium Park, it was a John Bright. It was somebody that had the right people on that speed dial. It was somebody who is respected nationally and internationally for what they've accomplished in their lifetime to date. We're in search of that John or Jane. We're getting close. But it's not there until it's there. But, you know, this is one of the things I hope you do is think about that website, culturalstadium.com. Leave a comment. If you want to engage, we'd love to have you. Tell us what you'd like to do. Tell us what you'd recommend. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Tell us what we're ignoring, what we haven't seen. We're all ears. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you, Chris, and to all our panelists. I had a feeling this might be a tough one to wrap up. We don't have time for any more questions, but there were a couple ideas and seeds to plant, perhaps. So I'm just going to mention, we also like to make news here.
Questions on culturestadium.org.
culturestadium.org. Lou said he would answer the questions on there. So we'll plant a couple of seeds. Francie Harrington mentioned, is Lollapalooza a model to select some insights? There were a couple of different comments about universities and getting the next generation involved. I think that's an important factor that we're dedicated here at City Club to doing and getting not only the universities that are downtown, but just the next generation of students and the new ideas into the conversation. And then we always love to make news here at City Club, so Nora Gaynor is going to help me with that. The Art Institute of Chicago, as of March 5th, the Art Institute will be open 6 days a week from 5, adding Wednesdays back. So here, we're all doing our part, and we all do play a part in this. Thank you all for playing your parts. Thank you, Jim Turman, for bringing all of this together. This was an incredible way for us as City Club to kick off our year. Jim Turman, Rick Jaskulka, his partner, have been busy these last couple of weeks, but we appreciate all of your efforts to bring all this together. There's a lot more to come. We have a program tomorrow with the Kirk Dillard from the RTA on transit, which will also factor into all of this. And then we just announced a program with the president of University of Illinois System, Tim Killeen, with many more to come in the next few days. So please keep an eye on our website and our email list. You're welcome back here anytime at City Club. Thank you again for being here and for all the good you're all doing for Chicago. Have a great day.